Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Inside Scoop Live. This is one of many features presented to you by Reader Views. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Hello, and thank you for tuning in. Today, I'm chatting with Deborah Slappy Pitts about her book, I Feel Okay. But before we dive into her book, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Deborah. Her writings of short stories, essays, and poetry span some 35 years, beginning with her first poem, The Beginning and the End, which she penned during high school years. This book, I Feel Okay, is her first published novel. I Feel Okay was recognized on the national best-selling list for nonfiction in the Booking Matters magazine for the months of June, August, and September of 2006. Deborah resides in Columbus, Georgia with her husband, Marshall Pitts, and is an associate director of software testing at TSYS, Inc. in Columbus, Georgia. She holds a B.S. degree in business administration from Georgia Southwestern University, which is in Americus, Georgia, and an MBA from Albany State University in Albany, Georgia. Deborah is also a member of the Church of Christ in Columbus, Georgia. Deborah, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you with us here today. Now, your book, I Feel Okay, I think the first thing I'd like to ask you to do at this point is to give the audience a little bit of the essence about what your book is about and what motivated you to write it.
I Feel Okay is about my husband, my late husband, Clyde Slappy. About 12 years ago, we discovered that he had a very rare disease. And that disease is called primary amyloidosis. It's one of those diseases that's so rare that not many doctors knew about it. And over the course of 5 months, my husband was 42 when he was diagnosed with this disease, December 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Within 5 months, he became weakened, and eventually he was at the Mayo Clinic, and he died 2 weeks short of getting a heart transplant.
Now, what is this disease? And tell the audience about the very terribly few people who are struck with this disease.
And that's the very reason I wrote it. It took me a long time. It took me 9 years, really, to be able to talk about it. But primary amyloidosis is a disease that's part of the amyloid family. And this disease is an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, everybody has antibodies, and
mm-hmm.
your antibodies are there to fight diseases.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with amyloidosis is once those antibodies serve their function, they're broken down. But with a person that has amyloidosis, instead of those antibodies breaking down, they begin to multiply and build and pretty much begin to flow, you know, along with your blood into every organ and pretty much in your body.
Attacking it?
It begins to what the doctors, the physicians are calling a folding effect. What happens, those antibodies that I was telling you about,
mm-hmm.
instead of those breaking down, they begin to multiply,
mm-hmm.
and they begin to interfere with the organ's function.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the heart. The heart is supposed to pump blood.
Mm-hmm.
Those amyloid deposits get into the heart, and they pretty much slow the heart.
Oh,
same
wow.
thing happens with the kidneys. Stomach.
What about the lungs? And
anywhere the blood flows, amyloidosis
wow.
or amyloid deposit or protein, as the physicians call it,
mm-hmm.
protein fibers, that they can travel throughout the body.
Now, in something that you've written, if I recall correctly, only about 8 in a million people are afflicted with this?
Well, that's... As far as they know, amyloidosis is an old disease. It's been around for over 300 plus years.
Really?
Yes. When we discovered it 12 years ago, no one knew, and that was the sad part. Some of the physicians at the hospital here in Columbus, Georgia,
mm-hmm.
Had diagnosed Clyde with water intoxication. I mean, they were coming up with every type of because they didn't know. And it was only by this cardiologist here that he began to look at, you know, his heart was growing, and there had to be some reason for that. But what happened over time, you have to have a special stain called Congo Red to even see the disease.
Oh, my.
And that's why it is so hard to detect. Most of the time, by the time it's detected in the patient, it is pretty much has gone what they call systemic throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cure for amyloidosis.
I was just about to ask that very question.
Exactly.
So it wouldn't matter how early or late in the progression of the disease, there's nothing medically that can be done for it?
Well, that's the good part. Once I learned some things after Clyde passed,
mm-hmm.
if amyloidosis is caught and is diagnosed in time, there are certain drug regimens, pretty much the same drugs that they use to fight multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, multiple myeloma and amyloidosis are pretty much, I would call them cousins, maybe sisters and brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They form in the bone marrow. And so many people know about multiple myeloma.
Right.
But very few, even physicians, know about amyloidosis.
Wow. And how long before the accurate diagnosis was Clyde experiencing symptoms?
We can go back, and I'm not sure even if this is for real or not, but I know Clyde would exhibit symptoms over a 20-year period of time.
Really?
He would have these very unusual cases and symptoms and conditions. But what I've learned over the course of the last 12 years, that usually it could be, you know, this disease could be there for who knows, 20 years, it could be 10, and it depends on the type of amyloidosis you have. There are four major types. Clyde had the most aggressive kind, which was called primary amyloidosis.
Mm.
There's no known reason why the amyloidosis formed.
Mm-hmm.
The next one would be what we call secondary amyloidosis, which is normally occurs after some chronic disease, maybe rheumatoid arthritis, those types.
Mm-hmm.
Number three mm-hmm. is a hereditary type of amyloidosis. And, of course, they can pretty much diagnose that pretty easily by looking at certain symptoms with the liver. Most of the time, the secondary impacts the liver more so than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a fourth, which is called localized. And that, I was just at a book signing in America, well, in Albany, Georgia, back in November.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a person that has it localized on their lip.
Really?
So, yes, and it presents itself. And really, over the last 12 years, doctors have, I am truly, truly thankful to see that the number of doctors, physicians, research hospitals, that are really, really have taken on more research in this area.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, especially if something like this has been around. Well, if it's been around for 300 years, it's been around for longer than that. They just didn't know how to diagnose it.
Exactly.
Like that, you know.
And,
mm-hmm. And so now, Deborah, you and Clyde were married for 21 years, right?
Yes.
That's a long time, and it had to have been an arduous experience for both of you to go through, let alone other family members and friends.
Well, see, in that time, we had no idea. As I go back and look at his symptoms, I don't know if all of those was associated.
Right.
Temporary blindness was one example.
Wow.
Was associated with this amyloidosis. Clyde was a Vietnam veteran. That's a whole nother discussion there.
Absolutely. It could have been any number of things. You know, it would be
yes.
easy to attribute the symptoms he was experiencing to entirely to Vietnam experience. Huh?
Exactly. It was only within that last, I would say, 93 and especially 94 when he began to get, you know, he would eat very little, and those are some of the symptoms. He would have paternal syndrome. That is one major symptom of amyloidosis.
Really?
Yes.
Yikes.
And others, amyloidosis mimic, in terms of symptoms, other diseases.
Mm-hmm.
For example, some of the symptoms include swelling of the ankles and legs, general weakness. I mean, these are so broad, weight loss, and that's usually mimic other diseases, shortness of breath.
Right.
But the carpal tunnel syndrome is perhaps the one of the ones that really stand out. Diarrhea, severe fatigue, enlarged tongue, believe it or not, and this feelings of fullness. And I remember Clyde having all of these symptoms and dizziness upon standing, just a number of general symptoms. But what the doctors and what the physicians are trying to get the especially at the teaching hospitals, to start looking at people, their protein level, their total protein when they're, you know, taking the blood work. Look at the cholesterol level. Look at the, you know, to make sure that they're not, you know, the hypertension.
Right.
And just to look at those as kind of like as a front line.
Wow. Now, now, Deborah, this is a work of nonfiction. This is your personal, yours and Clyde's journey, and obviously, subsequent to Clyde's death and your remarriage to Marshall, obviously Marshall has gotten very involved in this process with you.
Oh yes, he has.
It's such a big part of who you are.
I every time we go, because we was just recently at the Mayo Clinic for amyloidosis support group in Jacksonville, Florida.
Great.
And trying to educate and trying to help as many people as possible to learn as much as they can. But he has always been there for me. And when I decided about, like I say, in 2003 to write this story, because I felt it was bigger than me, and we talked about it. It's bigger than him. It's a question of life and death, and so many people don't even know they have this disease.
Well, no, and from many of the symptoms you've just listed off, so many of those are characteristic of any number of other problems that are not life threatening like that. So it would be way too easy to either minimize or to completely dismiss the fact that there might be something seriously wrong here. And as I understand it, your primary purpose another one of your primary purposes for writing this book is to really spur the public at large and maybe even the medical community to become aware of the fact that this disease is not dead and gone. It's alive and well.
Definitely. It is definitely alive and well. I go back and forth on emails nightly, speaking with patients, people that I know right now that have it, speaking to caregivers, mothers and daughters and fathers and sons that know someone and that their relative has this disease, and it they're not able to do anything, especially if it's at its latent stages.
Right.
So what I'm doing and what so many other folks are doing out there now is to educate doctors, to educate. There's a group, the Amyloidosis Group Network out of Atlanta, Georgia. One of their mission is to go to these medical hospitals. The medical when they have these conventions and have a booth up and to educate, and that has helped over the course of these last few years more and more. As I say, teaching hospitals are also learning more and trying to do more, because this disease, believe it or not, 12 years ago I could truly say that they only mentioned it during the medical schools. It was an honorable mention, and that's pretty much. Now I'm hearing that they really are beginning to talk about it.
Good, because as we also said, just because maybe 8 in 1,000,000 have been documented as diagnosed doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that that's all that have been afflicted with this.
Definitely, and that's the scary part to me, because this is just only the ones that know. And when you finally learn, thank goodness there are doctors out there that are able to, not just when a patient comes to them with these general symptoms, they don't just stop there, especially when they go back and they say, well, I'm still having these same type symptoms. Will
Right.
you look further?
Right.
And that has spurred these other doctors, hospitals like Boston Medical. Dr. Martha Skinner, Mari Gertz at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Clyde ended up at. And they are on the frontier doing everything that they possibly can to find a cure for this disease. the beautiful part of it, and I was going to mention this earlier,
mm-hmm.
if it is diagnosed early enough,
mm-hmm.
there are regimens of chemotherapy as well as stem cell transplant that may stay or stop those deposits of amyloid.
Really? Well, that's good to hear.
Yes.
That is good to know. Now, Deborah, what kind of, I mean, how elaborate is the real test for this disease? Is it an elaborate test, or is there some simple test that can be performed to provide some early on results?
What happens, depending on, as I said, the type of amyloidosis, but normally a fat aspiration, that's, you know, one of the things that a doctor or, you know, a researcher
mm-hmm.
would be looking at, or maybe possibly a medical doctor.
Now, what is that?
And what they do, they just literally take some fat, mostly in your stomach area,
mm-hmm.
and actually take some fat out of your body,
mm-hmm.
out of the stomach part.
Uh-huh.
There are other areas you can take, of course. That would be the rectum. But also, and I just was, I'm just reading all kinds of wonderful things, and this is probably because of once they diagnose a person that has it. They have a center in London, England, where they have a body scan, where they actually scan to see where within your body that the amyloidosis is. I mean, that is huge to find that, you know, found out about that. It's called a SAP scan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, this removal of some fat, say from the stomach area, mm-hmm. they can test that. There are some fairly simple tests that they are diagnostics that they can perform on that to render conclusively whether this amyloidosis is present?
Well, yes and no. And the reason I say that, Boston Medical, I mean, there are other hospitals throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of this one, Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Mm-hmm.
That's in
mm-hmm.
New York City.
Mm-hmm.
There are others. There are University of Indiana. And there are pretty much places all over the country now.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, 12 years ago, that was not the case.
Right.
But now there is a protocol that Boston Medical and also Mayo Clinic have created. They have developed.
Good.
And depending on where, you know, if the doctor's not, you know, if they feel that they have the necessary equipment, the lab, the Congo Red, and all of these things that need it, yes, they can. They don't have to have a lot of the fat aspiration. You know, they don't have to have a lot of the fat for the biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
can and do that test. And using the Congo Red stain, you will clearly see whether that, you know, they have amyloid or not.
And you're also saying that this Congo Red stain is something that they are making sure to have a growing supply of or an abundant supply of so that they can perform these tests.
Oh, definitely. That's just part of it. The thing about with amyloid, you cannot see it with conventional laboratory use, whatever they use to actually stain, or you can't see it. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's the interesting thing. I was reading in one of these journals that they were saying, it is the most well-kept secret. This disease is right in front of your eyes, but you can't see it because you don't have it stained. Once you put this Congo Red stain, then the amyloid proteins show up.
And what's amazing and what's important for people to know, if I understand correctly from what you've shared with us so far, is that don't minimize the symptoms that you're struggling with. Don't just brush them off as because this test can be fairly easily performed. It's a fairly easy diagnostic to perform, right?
It is, and, you know, depending on what the doctors, because a lot of times some of the doctors are not going to want to do it. They're going to say, you know, you don't have anything like that, and
mm-hmm.
you heard this lady talking about it. It is saying if you have gone through several regimens of tests and you're still having some issues, you still, you know, you're reading some of those symptoms or listening to some of those symptoms, it doesn't hurt to try to take a second look.
Right. Well, of course, because obviously if somebody goes to the doctor presenting certain symptoms, like many of the symptoms we've just talked about, and the doctor prescribes whatever protocol he or she believes will help to alleviate those symptoms, and the symptoms indeed are alleviated, then that's it. There's no concern. But you're saying that if these symptoms persist and defy the possibilities of a medical protocol, then especially over a series several times, right?
Exactly.
Then it sounds like it's high time to look deeper.
It's high time, and that's what Clyde kept saying over the years. He kept saying, "I have this stomach pain." And the doctors would go through, they would run the test, they would go through the various procedures, and they would come back to say, there's nothing there. And I was standing right next to him. And so I would hear him say, I would hear the doctor say, there's nothing there. But then once they finally diagnosed that he had amyloidosis,
mm-hmm.
he turned to me, and I won't ever forget it. He said, "Debbie, I told them something was wrong."
Mm-hmm.
I told them. So I would just, we would not accept no for an answer. And that's what I would tell people. If you just, if you can't get the answers, you have to keep looking elsewhere. You may have to go to another doctor. You may have to do whatever you have to do. But we were determined that we were going to try to find someone to help him. And we got to the Mayo Clinic.
Well, and that is so true. I mean, historically speaking, it's been far too easy for, and I'm not slamming the medical community, but historically it has been far too easy for if they couldn't diagnose what was wrong and either cure it or control it or manage it, then well, there must not be anything wrong. They would dismiss it rather than being inclined to look deeper. But I think it seems to me that we have I'm afraid I'm going to offend someone out here, and I don't mean to, but a younger medical community coming along, more willing to look deeper.
Yes.
And if it takes the patient's insistence on doing that, then why not? There is nobody who is an expert on your body but you.
Exactly.
You are the expert, and you know if you're not comfortable, you know if you're not well, you know if something's not working right. You may or may not be able to verbalize it articulately to a medical person because you don't have that terminology, in your brain bank.
Exactly.
But you're the expert on your body.
Exactly.
And I'm a firm believer in each of us being personally empowered to say, look, something's wrong here. And just because you haven't been able to diagnose it yet doesn't mean that there's not something there. And, don't scoop me out the door and write me off as a hypochondriac or something else, just a complainer. Because people don't enjoy not feeling well.
No one does.
That's right. No one enjoys not feeling well. And anyone who's not feeling well is looking for some relief and for some help.
Exactly.
And so, if I've offended anyone out there, I'm sorry it was not intentional. But I believe in people being personally empowered to take themselves as experts of their bodies to, as long as they can afford to do it, have the resources with which to do it, and seek some answers.
Continue to seek
answers. Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, Deborah, you've also mentioned that there are some support groups springing up. Apparently, you've mentioned one in Florida, and I think, didn't you mention one in Georgia as well?
Yes, there are really several, and I've worked with Muriel Finkel. This is the amyloidosis support group. And she's out of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
There is also the one I just mentioned, the Amyloidosis Support Network, that's out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that I will always remember and always appreciate is the one that's Amyloidosis Network International. At that time, far as I know, he was the only one. His name is Jim Lang. He was the only one. And I was able to go through, I mean, if you read the book, you'll see where I talk about, I went to Walden's bookstore in Columbus, Georgia, mm-hmm. Mall, and bought a medical book called John Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And that book was the rare diseases of people for people over over 50.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I went back and through my research experience, I was able to find this national organization for rare disorders. It's called NARD, the acronym.
Mm-hmm.
Through
national
them,
organization for rare diseases.
Exactly.
N-O-R-D.
Through them, I was able to get the information from the Amyloid Network International as well as Mayo Clinic.
Mm, great. Well, Deborah, if you can believe it, we are just about out of time here.
Oh! You can tell I have a passion for this.
Well, of course you do. Of course you do. And we want to strongly support that and encourage others who think they might have some similar issue at hand, any kind of a rare disease. Any kind of a rare disease. But Deborah, before we totally run out of time here, you have a website, right?
Yes, it is.
And
it's,
please tell us what that is.
It's DeborahSlappyPitts.com, just like it is, DeborahSlappyPitts.com.
Okay, DeborahSlappyPitts.com.
Correct.
And on your website, they can keep up with, well, they can probably gain a lot of information about how to go about finding a support group for families dealing with rare disease disorders, as well as for further efforts on your part. They can keep up with what's going on with you and what you're up to.
Exactly. And I have that on the website. You can also go to the Internet and just type in amyloidosis, amyloid, any of those. I'm just trying to spread the word all over the world.
Right. And what I want now, where can they find your book, Deborah?
Any bookstore, any on the Internet. It's available.
Now, it's not listed on Amazon, is that correct? Or
yes,
it is.
It
is on Amazon.
It is listed on just about any bookstore, bookstore on the Internet.
Wonderful.
You can go to any bookstore, in a brick and mortar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's available.
And I would assume they could also order it from your website.
Yes, they can.
Okay. And I also want everyone to know that this interview is going to be posted to your author's page on Inside Scoop Live. And readerviews.com and DeborahSlappyPitts.com websites will have links to this interview. So I really want to encourage everyone out there to listen to this, take a listen, read the written interview, read the reviews, and consider purchasing this book for yourself if you're dealing with rare disorders of any sort, and or for a friend or someone that you know that is struggling in this area, or if you're someone who's working in this area and want to know more about what's going on here in terms of increasing public awareness of rare disease disorders and things of that sort. Deborah, I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you inviting me. Thanks so much.
Better believe it. And audience, thank you for tuning in to this segment of Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Gail Campbell. Until the next time, bye.
Bye-bye.